you know, we're all kind of pushing ourselves to the max nowadays. And I think there's a lot to that, getting out and seeing something from a different perspective and then working on people on their, you know, ability to stay in the present and not project and always be creating scenarios that are out of your control, you know, and may never happen.
You're listening to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, and this is Trail Talk, where we have casual conversations with all kinds of runners. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultra runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation will go. So if you're ready, let's get started. Welcome to the show. Welcome back, the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. My guest this week is Rob Koch. If you see him on Instagram, he goes by Vegan Vet Runner. And so, and that says a lot, I think, about kind of your perspective. And he is an Army vet. He is a plant-based runner, of course. He's an ultra runner and a running coach. And there's some other things that that I think he's into that we'll probably get into as the conversation develops. So welcome to the show, Rob.
Thanks for having me, Eric.
Yeah, yeah.
Great to be here.
And you are also a Kansas City native, and so I follow you on Instagram. So I see your pictures in Kansas City. I also see you like other places too. And it seems like you just have a life of adventure, and you're going everywhere. So,
well, I try. Yeah, but you know, it's all about 10-hour trips in a car. Uh-huh. You know, on the weekend, and I can work remotely.
Okay. So
I just hole up in a hotel for 5 days and go try to do as much adventure as I can.
Yeah, yeah. I love seeing all the places that you go to. It's been fun to watch your adventures. I always try to. I mean, this is what I try to do is make this like a virtual trail run, and so if you meet somebody on the trail you've not talked to before, usually you start out by, you know, saying how did you get started in running, running in particular, and then also, you know, in running trails.
Yeah, well, it goes way back. I have a lot of gray hair now, but I have like a young outlook, and generally speaking, if I didn't have this beard, maybe people wouldn't think I'm as old as I am. But I've been running, I just figured this out the other day, 45 years of actual competitive, or in some way, shape, or form, competitive running. I started when I was like 8 years old, on the track, CYO track, came out for Holy Cross track and field. And, you know, I found that I was a good middle distance runner. I mean, I was actually pretty successful. And one of the stories I like to tell is when I was 9 years old, my parents and my friend's parents forgot, there was a mix up and forgot to pick us up at track practice one day. Mm-hmm. So just like, just go run some laps. They'll be here in a few minutes. And we ran on this old cinder course, you know, back in the days when 880-yard courses and or tracks and cinder.
They had cinders on the
yeah.
that was their cushion was the cinders. I know.
When it rained it was hard, but and it was, I love the sound. That's what got me, you know, with trail running. That's why I am so attracted to the trails and the woods versus the roads, because I love the sound of that squishiness, you know, that like crunching sound underneath your feet. And we ran, you know, our parents never showed up. So we ran 25 laps around the track, and we had he taught us how to like take cinders and put them in one hand so you could figure out how many laps you did, so transfer them.
Okay. Yeah. You know?
It was like a way of counting before Garmins and things. Yeah. And you know, we found out, we're like we've been here. You know, I don't, we didn't know how long 25 laps was, but it turns out it's like six, it's probably a 10K. And nobody showed up. And then we ran. So we decided to run home. So that day we probably put in about 8 or 10 miles. And from then on, I was a distance runner.
Okay.
I'll start it. 8 years old.
Getting, 8 years old. Wow.
Not that's, getting picked up by your parents.
Yeah. That's pretty good. So then did you run competitively in college?
No, I actually played soccer at the University of Maryland. I was a soccer player and track athlete in high school. So mm-hmm. indoor and outdoor. So a lot of running, but
a lot of running there, yeah.
Never ran cross country. Then I went off to Maryland and played varsity soccer. Ended up getting into like a little bit, not, I mean, I wasn't a professional soccer player. I'd say it was more like semi-professional and getting paid to help people, you know, win leagues and things like that. But,
oh, okay.
I coached with a professional soccer team in Milwaukee that won the second division under the MLS.
Wow. Okay.
Sporting Kansas City is, we yeah. won a national championship. So got that, you know, one thing to my credit. But, I mean, I was an assistant coach. Don't get me wrong. I wasn't like in charge of everything, mm-hmm. but yeah, I was a soccer guy. But I was underneath it all. I was always running. Mm-hmm. You know, that was where my enjoyment was in running. Soccer was more social. Mm-hmm. I think. So that was my social outlet, but running was my mental, you know, just getting out there in the woods and nature and just getting myself uh-huh. normalized.
So, and you're a vet. So you at some point yeah. joined the Army.
Yeah. I went into the Army, I was an interrogator, an Arabic linguist, got deployed to various spots around the world. And, you know, mm-hmm. probably I think that's part of my mental fortitude training, you know, mm-hmm. just being able to endure difficult situations and just deal with it, you mm-hmm. know. I mean, I think running since age 8 was also part of it, but, you know, it also became like just something that, you know, you learn to deal with things and look at things in a positive light, even though you're really in a deep doo-doo situation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just learn to kind of interpret your own reality without going into that like catastrophizing phase, and just kind of work your way through it, because there's nothing it's out of your control. Mm-hmm. It's like a race. A lot of it is out of your control. So minimize your catastrophizing and your projections. Mm-hmm. Just deal with what you have right here.
Uh-huh. Well, and you know, people go the opposite way too. I mean, we all know people who they can, you know, they can have a perfect day and they'll find something wrong with it.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. And then there are other people who have a, you know, just the, it seems to be a natural, I mean, a lot of people think it's a natural tendency, and maybe that is part of it, but it's also a skill.
And, yeah. I think it's definitely something you can learn to do. You know, some people seem to thrive off of chaos and kind of beating themselves up, but I just don't think, I mean, I think if you were into the applied sports psychology world, which we touched on before we got on here, and I'm a graduate student at Adams State University under Dr. Brian Zilliger, who does an online program there for anybody interested in getting into applied sports psychology. You know, it's a great program you can do as you're working. Mm-hmm. to live anywhere in particular or anything. But, you know, I think when you're looking at maximizing your potential and your performance, more than likely you're going to have to move away from those negative self-talk and that just interpreting your reality as being like something you have to overcome. Mm-hmm. And just kind of move into a more of a positive, encouraging motive, you know, motivational side. Mm-hmm. And you can, because you don't, you're draining mental energy is what the way I always describe it.
Okay.
When you're negatively interpreting the same situation mm-hmm. as somebody else who just goes right through it and deals with it, you know?
Yeah.
And other, you know, some people you just know they're always going to, you know, give you the comment or something as you're, when you're in a race, you know, it's a hill mm-hmm. and they're like, oh my God, another hill. And you just like, you just go right up the hill and you don't respond, you know, you just keep moving. And you rarely see those people again, you know, somewhere back there somewhere, or maybe they don't even finish, but you know, it's like you wish that that people would take a different outlook towards something that supposedly they love mm-hmm. into running. You know, you got to love the process.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, and that the that outlook. I mean, the we all have habits, you know, language mm-hmm. habits, the way that we talk, the way we talk to others, the way we talk to ourselves, and you know, when you may. You know, that's almost self-talk, even though someone was talking to you said, oh, it's another hill, but it, yeah. it was really kind of a reflection of where they were at. And
yeah,
I mm-hmm. ran into that when I was running out at Lake Clinton, and there's a 100 mile trail race out at Clinton Lake called the Hawk 100. And 2 years ago, they canceled it last year. 2 years ago, we had all kinds of rain. And so there's a lower trail, which they call the Blue Trail, which is would be a fairly easy mountain bike trail. And then the White Trail is what we normally come on the way back. Very technical, lots of rocks. Well, because of the rain, they ran most of it on the White Trail. And so they got mm-hmm. a double dose of the rocks. And it was somewhere in the afternoon. And this guy said, oh my God, all these rocks are just, his comment was, these rocks are getting in my head. And what do you expect? I mean, it's rocks. this is the trail. My, you know, and there's nothing, the only thing that I could see was you accept what you've got, you know, accept what the trail brings to you. You know, complaining about it isn't going to change that at all.
Yeah, I think acceptance is a major component in that ultra marathon, as you put it, mindset. First of all, this is all voluntary activity, right?
I mean, we're doing it because we want
captured,
to.
You know, or something. Yeah. You're like, until you finish this race, you shall be, you know, limited to this one space, and you know, you're under our control, you know, the trail control or whatever. No, you volunteered for it. Just go for it. Accept your circumstances. If it's hot, it's hot. If it's cold, it's cold. If it's icy, it's icy. You know, you kind of know all that going into it mm-hmm. because you're standing there at the starting line. Yeah. You know, I've been like, I think maybe we did a couple of similar races over time, but like the Psycho Waiko 50K a couple summers ago. It was like, I mean, it was 98 degrees.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's like, what are you going to do? I mean, first of all, it's probably not healthy, but we're in it, you mm-hmm. know, and we just got to hydrate. And we just got to stay cool within our levels of cool, whatever that is, by proper hydration and putting some ice packs on our head at aid stations or whatever. But complaining about it is not going to do you any good.
Yeah, no.
Better to accept it and just concentrate on something. Maybe not even concentrate on any. You know, like I look at ultra running a lot of times and marathon running. It was just this like trance-like state where you go into almost like people talk about focus. Focus is one thing, you know, when you're on a technical course or you're dealing with routes or it's nighttime or something where you have to consider obstacles. Mm-hmm. But there's also this state of like a defocus when you you detach yourself from your own circumstances, you know, because that's what gets you, all of a sudden you realize you're like 8 miles down the trail. Mm-hmm. And think, well, how did that, you know, these people call it flow state or whatever, but whatever you want to call it, it's very difficult to put a finger on what happened. And I think sometimes that's a learned behavior, mm-hmm, through many, many miles, mm-hmm, the miles, as they call it, you know, just dealing with all kinds of situations and taking yourself out of your own predicament. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily thinking about anything. Sometimes, you know, you got to use your self-talk or your mantras or your motivation or whatever. But sometimes you just have to detach. And oftentimes that can get you through, mm-hmm, circumstances that maybe you would, if you overthunk it or whatever the word, you probably wouldn't, you'd be walking or you'd be sitting on the side of the trail, you know, mm-hmm, pouting.
Yeah. Well, and it's odd because detachment sounds like you're somewhere else. And so you're actually there. It's almost like a dual from my experience. There's a presence of being where you're at, or they call it being in the now, being in the moment, that flow state. But there's also an almost timeless quality about it. And so that,
yeah,
so that you, you're not the passage of time and the distance that you cover, it's not the same. You don't have the same feeling of, oh my goodness, I've got another however many miles to go. It's like there's, yeah, and that is something that I think is beneficial. If you can achieve that state, cause you can keep going and you're not so concerned about, oh, what, you know, all of those worries about the things that you might worry about, how far it is, how tired you are, kind of all fade and level out.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's, you know, I used to teach athletes more so, you know, like middle distance and marathon, not ultra racing. I've never coached anybody in ultra running, mm-hmm, but I've coached distance runners. And I mean, I guess I have coached ultra runners, but you know, more so it's been more informal. Mm-hmm. But you know, when you talk, like there's certain cognitive strategies. Some of them are like mind off, mind on, or like point of execution, or, you know, just being able to chunking, you know, taking situ, you know, like, get to the tree. Mm-hmm. But anything else, just get to that tree. Get to the next aid station. One of my favorites is mind off, mind on, where you go through, like I used to do that in marathon run. You just don't, you deal with it like it's a Sunday run. You know, you're hanging out with your friends. Mm-hmm. I got pictures where I'm just like laughing, you know, running at like 6:05 pace or something in a marathon, but smiling and talking to this other guy who's like got a grimace on his face, like, you know, he's going to die. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking at it like I'm like consciously turning all of that off, the race focus off, and thinking, just enjoy it. Mm-hmm. But then there comes a point where you turn your mind on. And you have, you know, there has to be a point where you take the casual, you know, enjoyment aspect of it, and then you start racing for your goal, whatever, mm-hmm, your goal, whether it's a time goal or a performance goal or something to that effect. You know, I think that's a great way to deal with it. And it's kind of in line with what you're talking about. And sometimes it happens naturally. Mm-hmm. Times you have to have a strategy going into a race, because if you're in like a 5K, you know, on the track, mm-hmm, it's gonna hurt. You know, if you're in a mile race on a track, you're gonna suffer. So how do you deal with it? Well, you have to go into it with some type of mental strength strategy.
Even on a short race.
Yeah.
Because people who run ultra marathons think that, oh, you're in a short race, it should be so easy.
Well, yeah, I always joke, like, I prefer to be out there as little, like, you know, sometimes people who take a long time to finish a race, I respect them more than if I was running a 2:30 marathon or something, because I would think it's a lot harder to go out for 4 or 5 hours on a road and suffer through the thing that I did in half the time, you know, but of course you're jacking up your perceived exertion and everything else.
Right. Right.
It's all relative, but kind of like in track, you know, if you're running a mile or 800, I mean, you're going to suffer. There's no doubt. But it's a short period of time.
Right. Right.
But it's still intense.
It's still intense. Yeah.
Some kind of mental, otherwise, you know, I mean, how many times have you seen in the Olympics, you know, somebody just fall off the back and it's like, you know, hey, we thought Alan Webb was going to win this thing, but he didn't, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, I think the same strategies can be used for anything over probably 800 or above. Mm-hmm. Necessarily for as long, but the same type of.
So with the mind, because this is the first time I've ever heard of the mind on, mind off. So do you have a strategy for when that transition happens? You would plan for, let's say, a marathon, that you would plan for having your mind off to, you know, at about the 18 mile mark and just kind of treat it like you said, treat it like any other training run. But then when you get to that point, you switch your mind on and then, so for each person there, that point of switching would be different.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of it, I think, has to do with your energy, like metabolizing energy. When you're racing a marathon, like in ultra running, we have the luxury of a lot of aid stations.
We have a lot of aid stations eating food.
Yeah. You can eat all kinds of stuff. And people kind of joke about it, like, you know, I'm in this for the eating, but I just run in between, you know, the aid stations. But you know, in a marathon, you're going to run out of energy, and what you know, you're also running at a higher intensity. So you're not necessarily going to be able to absorb or metabolize what, and unless it's very simple, like say what's the type of carbohydrate that's easily metabolized.
Mm-hmm. The whole goo, and you know, the goo packets, I know that's a brand name, but whatever they, you know, the little supplement packets. I mean, that's the whole point for that almost instant boost of energy.
Yeah. Like absorbing it in your saliva, or, you know, on the way, and doesn't have to get into your stomach and go through a bunch of processes. Because otherwise, because you're not going to have the blood flow, which kind of, it always surprises me when in an ultra marathon, you know, 100 mile race, when somebody's eating like pizza and you know, like
quesadillas, cheese quesadillas are a big deal, and in a lot of a lot of places.
But it's like your body can only absorb because your muscles are the primary reason your leg muscles and your cardiovascular muscles are. And your brain are trying to, you know, they're using high levels of energy. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to you're not going to be able to take a hamburger and turn that into energy in a 50K or, you know, a 50 miler.
Yeah.
But a goo packet. Yeah. I mean, that's straight to your brain and straight to the working muscle.
Yeah.
maybe not straight, but meaning like in a very,
very quick time.
Simplistic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean,
and I think unfortunately that also leaves at about the same rate.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to be using it pretty quick. So yeah, I mean, it's kind of a dance. But in a marathon, getting back to your original question, there comes a point where everybody is going to go into this decreased state of work energy to the working muscle. Mm-hmm. That's when I think if you turn your mind on and you're able to deal with your the race itself versus just kind of getting to that point, then you start using all of what you've learned over time and all the training to get yourself to the finish line. So I guess that's where I would say,
okay,
in a race like that.
For a long time, I used to watch the Tour de France, and that is kind of what you're describing here. They're in the peloton or whatever until they get to a certain point close to the finish where the sprinters can, okay, now we can go. And so that strategy is kind of applied to what you're saying with running. You get to that yeah. point, then you turn your mind on. Let's go. And now we're going to start using our race strategy and we're racing now.
Yeah. And they get kind of mixed up because like point of execution would be like at the, whatever you want to call it, the 16 mile point, that's when I'm going to start executing my race. So, it's kind of like they all start jumbling together, but generally speaking, if you can I think the mind off is more a conscious decision to treat what you're doing in a less serious, stressful way. Mm-hmm. As opposed to if you did point of execution, you could still be strategizing and like working off, people making moves and not making moves or whatever, if you're really a real racing for a win or something like
that. Well, some people are doing it for time. And so, we all compete with ourselves.
Yeah.
The elite athletes are the elite athletes, but most of us who are not going to be, not going to be on the podium, we have a goal. So we're competing against, our own abilities.
So. Yeah. Well, I think I'm a process goal kind of guy. I don't really put, I know where I am generally, training wise. So it's not as though I'm looking it when I was seriously running, like now I just kind of enter a race and just, I can handle, see what I can do. But, I kind of knew where I could be generally. I didn't really care about the other athletes because they're totally out of my control. I can't, I don't know what they're doing. I don't know how they're training. I don't know what their mental state is, or, they got a good night's sleep or, all these things. So you can control yourself. But, I think when you go into a race with process goals, like task oriented, where you're dealing with your intermittent performance oriented versus result oriented goal, which would be a specific time or a place on the podium, then you can, I think it's easier for me to deal with. I don't know if everybody, I know, there's some serious Hall of Fame athletes who are cutthroat competitors, but people probably didn't like them very much, so I don't know if being that way is, it's kind of like this Vince Lombardi rah-rah mentality, but in the end, we're all just in this together. That's like the Olympic motto originally was like competing together, whatever the Latin was or the Greek, competing in this together, and competing against, like you said, yourself, you know, mm-hmm. your prior performances, your own ability, like where you stand. And I think that for me is more motivational than putting myself out against other people.
Yeah. And I've heard runners, and I've said this too, for me, you know, why I do this, I want to see if I have what it takes. And I've talked to other ultra runners. And so, you know, I'm competing against the distance. Can I, you know, do I have today what it takes to get from here to the finish line? And, you know, and that's my ultimate goal. I mean, I have time goals as well, but my ultimate goal is to finish, to not be, you know, not break down. And, you know, the distance is your competitor, you know, especially when you get up over 50 miles, because, there's just so many variables.
Yeah. You can't control the weather. You can't control, you know, I guess there's so many things, like when it's, you know, darkness, you know, it's like, you just don't even understand sometimes, like, because like what we talked about earlier, it's like the lapse of time. Mm-hmm. And you're, why is it, you know, it's dark. What are those things? I remember being in Leadville. I thought there were a bunch of bugs, you know, like moths, because in Kansas City in August, mm-hmm. not going to snow, you know. Yeah. What are these things? And it's like nighttime, and you've been out for like 16, you know, or probably more, because you couldn't sleep the night before the race started and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I realized it was snow, you know, and it's like, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah. And at night in a headlamp, snow, it looks, it's not totally different than when you can see forever.
It's like being in a car when, you know, you're going down the highway and you can't see anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're used to it in the car, but in that context, I mean, we just being out there on the mountain and it's like stuff coming down. Yeah.
It's odd.
So was that was just that wasn't necessarily a hallucination. It was just a misinterpretation of what it was.
Yeah. It was real. There's some crazy stuff that happens out there, you know, in the mountains where, when we, you know, I think a lot of what in Kansas City, one thing I found, which I didn't, you know, I'd heard about this, but training in the heat, like what we have with the mm-hmm. humidity and the oppressive
heat and humidity.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, it's, I think, from what I've heard, the dew point is higher in the morning. Kind of, that's why you have that mm-hmm. mist and the dew and, you know, everything on the ground. And
sometimes fog, yeah.
But it may be cooler in terms of temperature, but in terms of humidity or whatever, you know, the dew point, whatever the technical mm-hmm. way meteorologists would describe, the air is saturated at dawn.
Yeah.
And then in the evening, you just have that, because I tend to run or walk and run. I do like multiple workouts and bike run or something. But I found that the heat and humidity was really good training, remarkably, even though we're primarily flat. We have some pretty steep hills in Kansas City, but mm-hmm. thing. Like 3,000 feet, you know.
Yeah, the hills are up and down.
Yeah. It's not. Yeah. So, you know, but the heat does it. So then I looked that up one time, and yeah, it's that humidity and heat, it replicates altitude training.
Really?
So that, I mean, at Leadville, I didn't have much problem at 10,000 feet.
Okay.
Which was surprising, because I kind of thought it would be like, you know, burden because you hear about it, like,
well, and I've there's another guy that run with on Thursday nights, he went out to Leadville, he drove overnight and then entered the race the next day, mm-hmm. and had no problem with the,
yeah,
so that's interesting.
I think there's different strategies for
that. Yeah,
like if you stay, you know, if you come and jump into it, sometimes I think there's been studies done where your oxygen level isn't affected as much as if you were there for like a day or two, but then you adapt over a week or two, mm-hmm. and you're going to be much better off.
Right. Yeah. So there's a space there between initial, you know, there's a space there where you lose that, I guess.
Okay. Yeah.
I did not know that either.
Huh. I learned that from soccer. That's from the old U.S. national team going down to Mexico and just, you know, getting their rear ends handed to them because mm-hmm. I think Mexico City is at like 7,000 feet. Or
something. Oh yeah. Yeah. So the football, when they play at Denver, football teams, they're okay if they just show up the day before, you know, that day. And
I would think so.
Well, yeah.
You know, I've never found Denver to be that bad, which is kind of, it's like you hear of it your whole life. You're like, oh, they're at Mile High Stadium, you know, mm-hmm. But once you go up to, you know, place like Leadville,
yeah,
Breckenridge, or, you know, these places, and it's like double, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you just start, you know, that's the start.
Yeah. 10,000 feet. Yeah. Up, yeah.
You know, it's like out here in Asheville right now, I think we're at like 2,700 or something. Okay. But like I climbed a mountain, the highest mountain east of the Mississippi, ran up that thing. It's 6,000 something. And you think, well, that's not even golden. You know, that's like Golden, Colorado, where, mm-hmm. you know, I go running, or, you know, I just run around Golden like it's nothing. But when you're, you know, it doesn't matter. Like I found that the elevation really doesn't matter. If you're starting at 2 and going to 6, 7, or, you know, whatever, or you're starting at 10 and you're going to 14, it's still going to hurt. It's just all like talk, you know, whatever. People say, oh, you got to go to the high mountains. Well, yeah, come over here and climb that mountain. Mm-hmm. It's beat you up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a race down in Oklahoma called the Outlaw 100. And, you know, you don't think of Oklahoma as having a lot of elevation, but, the race director specifically designed it to have more climbing than Leadville.
Really?
Yeah. And so the total elevation gain in the 100 is, you know, right at maybe a little bit more than what Leadville is. And so you don't have the high elevation, and it's all up and down, but mm-hmm. it's a tough course.
Yeah.
Not a lot of running because it's very technical.
Power hiking.
Yeah. Most people. Now there are people who do run. I mean, they can, you know, people who are really good at it, but I mean, you've got to be very agile. There's a lot of rocks.
Yeah. We get good training at that.
Oh yeah.
Kansas City.
Tell a little bit about you. You are a plant-based runner. Assume, have you always been that, or how did that decision come about?
No, I think it was about 5 years ago. I just started like falling apart. I mean, basically, kind of like, you know, I was starting to wonder, like, is there something seriously wrong with me? You know, I mean, I probably was turning, maybe I was like 49 or 50. I don't know. Maybe it was 6 years ago. And like, I got a frozen shoulder. I had a hernia. I was running like in Overland Park, just flat, you know, on the, mm-hmm. what do you call it? Not the, I always want to say trolley trail, but the trail that goes to
Indian Creek. Indian Creek. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's like, I felt this pop in my hip, and it turns out over multiple diagnoses and like even one guy saying I'm going to need a hip replacement. And, this one guy's like, no, that guy is way off. What you have is a torn labrum from a bony protuberance, you know? And what happened was, I guess, over time from overuse, like I probably had popped something, you know, one of my ligaments or tendons in my hip. And so I guess the bone kind of, you know, started calcium started getting absorbed and started like tearing into my hip labrum, and they just shaved it and cleaned it up. And so I got through all that and I'm like, okay, well, what do I do now? Cause they're like, you know, people are saying like, you can't run, you can't do this. And I was like, yeah, I'm not gonna sit around for the rest of my life. So I started walking, and then I started hiking, and then I started biking, and I started running again. And I was still kind of wary. So the inflammation issue came to me as one day I just decided, okay, I'm just going to try this whole plant-based thing, because I'd heard about dairy and, animal products causing inflammation.
Causing inflammation, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in your joints and arthritic stuff, and, you know, whatever. So I haven't turned back. I mean, I just did it like cold turkey. And ever since then, I've run 100 miler. I feel I'm certainly destroyed, but I come back from it pretty quick. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really the thing. I think it's all about minimizing your inflammation in your joints and your, as you age. I mean, I'm like, you could get away with anything when you were young, but at some point you're going to have to start thinking about things, in my opinion, in a more logical way, where you decide, okay, well, I shouldn't be drinking, you know, milk and eating, you know, whatever, dairy, if I'm going to go into a race, you know, eating pizza. I was a pizza holic, but the cheese and the dairy was just creating all kinds of problems for me. So, and it wasn't even like a gluten thing or anything, you know, which I think is another issue. It was more just things just didn't want to work right. So went into the plant-based world, and next thing you know, I'm fine. You know, I'm running every day and I'm older, you know, and no worries.
So how does fueling work for you then in 100 milers when you're, or when in the ultra, and when you're running in an event, you know, that kind of distance, what kind of fueling strategies do you have? That's because you can't necessarily rely on the aid stations, I would imagine.
No. Yeah. Unfortunately, I found that out when I made a mistake by like only taking, who's at Leadville, when you go up over Hope Pass and you go out to like the 50 mile point, and then you got to come back. So there was no crew out at the 50 mile point. So I looked at it as like one aid station, but it was really two legs, and I just stuff. So I'm like eating, you know, potato chips or whatever, which, you know, they're great for the salt, but they're not going to give you a whole lot of energy. But for me, it's mainly, I eat rice. I eat salted potatoes. I eat sweet potatoes, avocado. You know, I mean, it's pretty basic. I look at it as a simplistic thing. I don't think there's any doubt when you've seen the carnage on the side of a trail and the people puking and the number of people who drop out of races. Think, you know, a lot of it is stomach issues. And if you keep it really simple and you use that, I think, I'm not sure on the term from a nutritional standpoint, but it's like low glycemic index or something, either high or low. I can't remember, but it meaning like, it's not going to spike your energy. So like if you eat a Snickers, so
low glycemic would not spike your energy. It gives you a steady flow steady release of nutrients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like a sweet potato versus a piece of cake.
Oreos.
You know? Yeah. Oreos.
I walk into an aid station and it's like those Oreos. I don't eat Oreos normally, but all of a sudden, it's just like they were calling my name and I had five of them, and that was a mistake.
I know. I mean, it's like you sometimes give in to your urges. But generally speaking, if you can be under control about it, I've never had any stomach issues, even in the extreme heat, like that 98 degree day mm-hmm. or extreme cold. And it's, you know, I've never also had any energy issues. I mean, I think your brain operates on glycogen. Mm-hmm. It's your working muscle. It's the only two systems, you know. We're not trying to build muscle as we're racing, you know.
Yeah.
So protein, fat, you know, you're going to need some, you know, I think if you're running a 100 miler. But you can get that out of avocados and mm-hmm. things of nature. So, you know, I mean, I don't like debate it with people. It's like, it works for me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they love eating, you know, hamburgers and pizza, but it's kind of like mental strength training or ultra marathon mindset training. You don't know what your potential is until you try different things. So right. It worked for me. I don't, you know, I'm not going to go back because it's kind of a thing now. It's like part of my health.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Long-term health. So.
Yeah. And I know people, and I'm not vegan. I mean, I still do dairy, but you know, I have been one that, you know, I can pretty much eat. I can't pretty much eat anything. I have to watch my sugar, but yeah, dairy and cheese and, you know, that, it doesn't affect me. I know, you know, my daughter and granddaughter, you know, they don't do well if they have dairy. And, you know, part of it for me, I think, is when I was a kid, I had brittle bones and my parents said, you're going to have calcium. And so they pushed milk on me.
Yeah.
And it helped. I mean, it was good, but yeah, I know for a lot of people there have food sensitivities.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
yeah, I mean, I think plant-based just eliminates a lot of the what ifs, you know. I mean, people still ask you, where do you get your protein? And I always say, you know, hey, do you know what a gorilla looks like? You know, Yeah. Have you ever seen a rhino before? I mean, they don't have to worry about where they get their protein. And I don't either.
Yeah. Yeah, it's doable. I mean, you can get protein. You can get protein and fat from plant based. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not difficult to do.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. it's interesting what you were talking about in ultras. I found that, you know, I can eat, you know, bacon, you know, like a lot of aid stations would have bacon. I could eat meat until about 50 miles. And then, you know, it I could still eat it, but it was unappetizing.
Yeah.
And so I'm still working on my nutrition strategy for, you know, 50 miles plus. Yeah. But I've gone to what we talked about earlier. Your body is doing other things. And if you're putting a lot of food in, and calling, you're basically taking away from your brain, your other muscles, to tell your stomach, oh, take some of the energy that I need to run to digest this food.
I know. That's the thing. I mean, it's all about blood flow. So if you decrease blood flow to the working muscle because you're trying to digest something, it's either not going to become digested, which meaning then you're going to probably be mm-hmm. up or feeling sick or whatever, or it's going to decrease your level of performance.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think Eliud Kipchoge, when he was running the sub-2 marathon.
Yeah.
He wasn't.
I don't think he was.
So, I mean, I just put two and two together for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
People can do, I'm one of those laissez-faire, you do whatever works. This works for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that there's, you know, the people that I know people who are, I mean, on the keto side of things. I mean, they're just as militant as some of the militant vegans and says, well, you've got to do this. And you have to find out what works for you. And it's just a process.
Yeah.
And yeah. My strategy is going to be baby food. Cause it's got enough, you know, the glycogen is level enough, but it has enough sugar. And so I'm kind of going to, and then pinole is another one.
The
Tarahumara
Born to Run.
Yeah. The Born to Run. Yeah.
Yeah. I've never tried that. I'm surprised I haven't.
You know, it, I found that I don't do a goo with gels, you know, with the gels that I just can't. And this is the closest thing to a gel because I can mix it in a Ziploc bag with enough water that's about the consistency of syrup, and I added brown sugar to it, and I can just shoot it, and it's about the same calories as a gel, and about the same, a little bit bigger, but it's tasty and digests easily. I mean, it's masa, and it's got lime and cornmeal, and I found that it works well, and I don't have stomach issues with it. I mean, you can.
Yeah.
And nor the heavy feeling. So, that's going to be this last year was when I kind of discovered it. And it was like, of course, none of us raced.
I know. I had such big plans that it worked for like 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Planned on running a race a month and I got off to a great start. And then it just went, everything. And this year again, I'm going to do that Perry Lake race.
Yes.
It's called, another.
Perry yes. Lake. Yeah.
The 40 miler. Cause 40 I've never mile. Run a 40.
Okay.
It's such an odd, you know, in between distance. So I figured I'd see what I could do. But you know, it's like, that's my first race of the year, like a real, you know, race mm-hmm. that try to do well in. I've been signed up for it. I've been a participant, I guess you'd say a lottery participant in the Angeles Crest 100 for the last 2 years. It's gotten canceled, so they keep bumping it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's out in California, and that's like one of the original, like, not Western states, but you know, one of the original six or so races,
right?
Hundreds. And but they had a big fire out there, which they tend to have out in the mountains around and then with COVID restrictions and permits, they put off another year. So I'm gonna have to do something.
Yeah.
You know? I might go out and just pace some people in Leadville because that's always fun. But
yeah,
I prefer to run personally myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I just read the Nighthawk, which is a night race at Lawrence, just added, they were able to add 50 more participants.
Oh, really?
And so, some of the races I think may start to open up a little bit more. So,
well,
just keep, it's one of those things that would probably be a fluid situation. Do you have any bucket list races, that anything that you've kind of had on your radar that you'd like to do or dream of doing someday?
Well, I think everybody kind of, I mean, not maybe everybody, but Western states would be something. I tried to get in the lottery, but obviously it's pretty hard. Maybe Hard Rock. I've also looked at the U-Ray 100, which is, I think it's got like 44,000, you know, feet of elevation gain.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So does that go from Uray to over Imogene Pass?
I believe the Uray 100 just kind of, it's centralized in Uray.
Okay.
And then you kind of do these outshoots.
Outshoots. Okay.
So you go up at 10,000, you know, I'm sorry. It's probably already at 10,000. You know, I mean, so you have like a 14,000 footer or a 12,000 footer, and then you come back.
Okay.
And then you get that one, and you do. So I think that's what makes it so difficult and so much elevation is because you're constantly, like in a normal race, you may be on a crest or you may be on a ridge, you know, and so you're kind of undulating at a certain, you know, so you're going to get vert, but you're not going to get the same amount as something that extreme. I think Hard Rock or, you know, those races are really, they try to make it as interesting, I guess you'd say, or adventurous as possible. That's kind of my thing now. I like to race, but I'm not really, you know, I just don't race just to do it. Although last year I probably would have, I would have a different mentality because that was my goal. It was that I was 55 and my goal was to run a race a month, like a serious ultra a month. Sorry, not ultra a month. But that got panned. So one day I'll probably kick that back in. you know, now it's more like I just like to get out and try things. I think there's a race that's out here in it's out of Black Mountain, North Carolina. And it's more like an adventure. I think they tend to have these adventure races out here, like the ones you see on TV where you like jump in a boat and then you like, you know, whatever, do a zip line or something like that. It's more like here's the GPX file. You need a certain level of equipment. You got to, you know, prove that you have a filtered water bottle, you know. Here's where the creeks are. Have a nice time. You know, we'll give you a t-shirt at the end. you just kind of go out. It's a 48-mile race and it's across like this traverse of 6,000 foot peaks. And you just have to kind of like some of those 200 milers where you can't really put out flags for 200 miles and you know, wherever, Mount Rainier or something like that. So they give you a GPX file and you just have to make sure you're on course. And then you know, you probably have a satellite, something that they issue.
Satellite tracker. Make sure they can find you if you stop moving.
Yeah. So that seems pretty cool to me. I mean, I think when you're in some of these ultras, it's like, it's almost as if, you know, you're in a road race sometimes where there's just so many people. It's like it's not really the same experience as when you're training, when you're kind of on your own and you're in the woods and you hear like a sound and you wonder what it is. And, you know, just a bunch of music and, you know, lights and stuff. And I mean, it's fun. Don't get me wrong. I love being out at Wyandotte Park and that one aid station, I forget the name of it, but where everybody's partying and, you know, they're like clapping and, you know, and music and got the big like unicorn or whatever. Putting out water on you or something.
Yeah. The inflatable unicorn with a water spraying out of the horn. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I mean, that's great.
My wife, my wife still refers to that shelter house as the unicorn shelter house because she can't remember the numbers. She says, oh, where the unicorn was.
Yeah, I know. And I remember the last one I did out there, I think it was in the winter. Todd Chandler and somebody else were up on a hill beating
with drums.
Were you in that race?
Because I was at the dam aid station.
Okay.
For that race. But I heard about it. And in fact, I could just hear the slightest rhythm of it. The drummers hiked to the top of one of the hills near the start finish and just drummed for
it was amazing because you could hear it forever.
Yeah,
you just kept getting closer and then it's like at first I thought they were an Evel Knievel outfits, but I think he later described it as like Captain America. But it was just hilarious because I don't know if it was one of the three sisters.
I think it was the second sister, if I remember. Okay. Yeah, there's a series of hills called the Three Sisters, and I think it was the middle one.
Yeah.
But
that's always fun. but it's also really fun to just get out there and like not know what you can do, you know, like you're on your own. Mm-hmm. And here you are, it's you and the mountain or the course, and how are you going to deal with this? You know, nobody's going to save you from this one. Yeah. So how do you make your way through this event or this training run or something? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. That's what my goal is right now. As a goal would be, you know, I don't think I'd ever do like the Barkley marathons, because I think it's kind of, I don't know, it's got like this fabricated like thing to it where everybody mm-hmm. makes it out to be this incredible challenge. But, you know, of course it is.
Of course it is. Yeah. You're navigating with maps and
yeah, but it's also like kind of,
you don't have the GPX. File. It's the same idea as what you were talking yeah. about with the GPX file, but you don't have any, you're out there.
But there's also like, they're trying to make it hard, you know, yes. like another way, like there's a book or no, we're not going to tell you anything or, you know, all these things where I think that's great, but I'd rather just not have it contrived. As mm-hmm. much as it is just natural,
you know? Yeah, just have the natural challenge of getting yeah. from point A to point B, and and there is a certain mysticism and cachet to the Barkley marathons, and you know I always tune in and kind of see who's running and see how they did, and mm-hmm. And I've enjoyed kind of that idea, but yes, it is intentionally made to be almost impossible. And, and so there, and I can see the appeal for that, but yeah, I was like, no, I like kind of what you were talking about, having something that's just, let's trek through the wilderness.
Yeah. yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now there are some adventure races that are similar to what you're talking about that have bicycles and canoes. And so there's a lot of variety, variations on the mm-hmm. adventure race. There's another lady that I follow. She's in South Carolina, and mm-hmm. she's an ultra runner and has gotten into adventure races. And so, yeah, bicycle and kayak. And
Yeah. I just, you know, it's like, I love mountain biking. And it certainly builds up the quad, you know, certain quads. And, mm-hmm. calves, got gastrocnemius, whatever. And it, you know, the type of stabilizing muscles that you would use downhill running or, but I've never, you know, if I was in a position or in a training for something, like I used to do triathlons, and it was just there's so much training, you know, and mm-hmm. You can't ignore swimming or, you know, But I just love to run. So I kind of would just do it because I had to. And that kind of wears on me. I don't like to be, I don't know, I guess I have kind of like a little bit of a rebellious or punk rock mentality to me in the you know, deep recesses of my mind, where I don't like people to like, I don't want to be told how to do it or like how I have to do it or like mm-hmm. that I have to do this to get to this point. I just like to do it. Uh-huh. And when there's a bunch of stuff, like maybe if it was that kind of adventure race, I'm sure it'd be really fun, but I don't think I'd really want to train. You know, I wouldn't want to say, I got to go kayaking.
Got to go kayak. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure I'd love to go. I mean, I've kayaked in the past, and it's fun, but I don't know if I want to train.
There's a difference between going out and just doing something and making it part of your training.
Yeah.
And so, if you're in a and most triathletes, they have one thing. It's like, oh yeah, I really mm-hmm. like this, and I'm going to do the others just because I'm a triathlete.
Yeah, that was my thing. I mean, I did one Ironman. I didn't know what I was doing. Like, I had never swum for 2.4 miles. I'd never run for 100. Or, I mean, rode for 112, and I'd never run a marathon at that point.
Wow.
But I did it all.
Did you train?
I did. I trained a lot. But I was like, you know, I had the wrong wetsuit. You know, I had this weird, like, I think they call it like a Farmer John or something, where it was more for like boating, you know. So I was like catching water. Uh-huh. And I was probably, it was probably be like having a parachute, you know. Yeah. Bonneville Flats race, you know, trying to go 600 miles an hour in a jet race car or something. So yeah, I mean, it was not a good, I was not ready to do it, but I ended up running the fastest marathon of the day. And that was all I cared about.
Wow.
10th place, you know, that was great. And I never did another one. You know? People are like, why don't you try to get sponsored? I'm like, I don't know. I don't really
want to do this. You were like, yeah. I don't want to do this again, right?
No. I mean, it's a, you know, I think it's more for me, it was like more for my ego. Like, oh, this is, if I knew about, I guess that was in the 80s. So these ultra marathons existed. But if I knew about Western States, I probably would have been out there, but I didn't know anything about it. You know, mm-hmm. Back in the day when you could probably just show up and run.
Yeah.
Yeah. but yeah, I didn't know any, I mean, in fact, when I moved to Kansas City, I went out to Shawnee Mission Park one day. These guys were coming off the trail, like a bunch of guys. And I was like, hey, wait, you know, what are you guys doing? You know, they're like, oh, well, we're trail nerds and, you know, or whatever. Maybe it was the Wolf Pack.
Yeah. It was probably trail nerds. I don't know if the Wolf, uh-huh. I think the Wolf Pack was a recent, I don't know.
It was like, you know, I didn't even know that there was, you know, trail running in these parks, you know, like they were having races. I remember being out at, I run on the trails. I had run on trails my entire life, but I didn't really get the fact that people were doing it like on a regular basis, you know, mm-hmm. And it was organized, you know, I just thought people just ran in the woods, you know, like I did. But, you know, then I realized pretty quickly that it was a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a whole thing and the whole
kind of late to the game, but you know,
hey. Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because, when I hear now, some of the people talk about the history of, you know, ultra running and trail running is like, this has been going on for a long time. And you know, there's just, yeah, it just wasn't widely known. It was widely known. It wasn't known by me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think road racing, you know, it's like, it's so obvious because mm-hmm. they shut down roads and they advertise things and, you know, you just always know about marathons and stuff. So I never really got past that until I decided at one point, I was like, you know, this, I know about these things and I'm going to go try them. And I ended up pacing somebody at Leadville and I fell in love with it. And that was it. I was hooked.
Yeah. Well, great. We started off kind of talking about your applied sports psychology and you said you're in the program. Yeah. Do you have a specific use? What are you going to do? How's the program going and where will that take you?
Well, I think, I mean, there's different directions it can go into. It's, there's a lot, you know, one of the things I found, which I didn't know, was that the US military is like the highest employer, or they employ the most sports psychologists of any industry.
Uh-huh.
Not, you know, it certainly wasn't going on in the days I was in the military. You know, when drill sergeants would just scream and yell and, you know, make you do push-ups all day long. Now it's like they have someone come in and work on the mental side of not only from like performance as a soldier, but anxiety, staying motivated. That, like what we discussed earlier, a little bit like catastrophizing, you know, like if you're going to get deployed, your brain is going to go, in a million directions, and none of them are good. Yeah. Unless you're a psychopath, and you just want to go.
Yeah.
But you know, usually you're very, you know, a lot of anxiety is going to build up, and you're going to think this may be the end for me. You know, so this whole it's more of a, I guess you'd say, a performance or that it's not sports psychology. It's applied performance or just anti-stress, or you know, telling people to perform at their, at whatever job they're in, whether it's the corporate world or something. I mean, kind of like, I guess what you're involved in with some of the business coaching. But I think I like the concept of nature therapy, which is a thing, forced bathing, you know, that's like a Japanese thing. But it's mainly just getting out in nature and enabling your mind to be more at peace and less, you know, less of this intense 100%, everything's always coming at you in our world of machines and devices and social media and all this stuff.
Right.
And you get out there and you look at a horizon, or you look at a mountain, and or you look from a mountain, and you can just, the peace that comes about you, and you know, it just enables you to have a much, you know, be more in the present and decrease your stress levels. That I think to me would be much more interesting. PTSD, things like coming out of the military, because I think it's a thing that none of us, and you know, even beyond the military, I think, you know, we're all kind of pushing ourselves to the max nowadays. And I think there's a lot to that, getting out and seeing something from a different perspective, and then working on people on their, you know, ability to stay in the present and not project and always be creating scenarios that are out of your control, you know, and may never happen.
Yes.
Somehow you believe, you create this alternate reality because you're overthinking. So that would be interesting.
That would
be where I'm going. I don't see myself like working with a professional sports team or anything. I'm kind of not in that position, I don't think, anymore. And I, you know, I think working with runners, I know enough runners out there who kind of, they have this extrinsic reward mentality, or this, you know, external, almost like trying to prove something, or get the buckle, or what, you know, whatever it is, which is good in a way, because it gives somebody something to think about. But I'm more, you know, I like, my concept would be like more self-determination theory based, or, you know, competence and, you know, building your own, just enhancing your own sense of self, as opposed to comparing yourself and proving yourself to others.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I think that's really a thing with a lot of people who don't hit cutoffs and they push too hard. And, you know, when I was out at Leadville, it was like all these people who I knew and went to camp with, I think only like three of them, you know, out of like 10 people who I was in contact with, finished the race, because they just mentally, I think it was just, they had, I won't say the wrong way of looking at it, but they just focused on the wrong stuff. You know, they were really focused on cutoff times and pace and this and doing, you know, it's just like, you know, you just, that's not, you just have to let it happen. I think a lot of it is letting go, acceptance, like you talked about earlier, and not trying to control things that you can't control.
Yeah.
And nature allows you to do that if you allow it to affect you. So trying to control nature.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And our society was kind of built on controlling nature. I mean,
yeah.
And then we've gotten so used to all of the noise in society that it's hard to have you. People take their own noise with them when they go into the woods.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember. Okay, here's a good one. If you know Yvon Chouinard, the guy from Patagonia, he said, you know, the thing with like climbing Mount Everest, you know, you get these guys, or these not just guys, but high powered people who they hire all the Sherpas and they hire all the people to carry everything for them and have all this top notch equipment. And they, I mean, he jokingly said, I think, you know, they put a little candy on your pillow and stuff. Yeah. And, you know, they basically take you up the mountain. You know, they do everything for you. And he said, you know, you're supposedly going in this for the self-enhancement and for the experience and this higher power thing, you know, to get closer to something beyond yourself. But with these guys, through his experience, you know, they go into it, you know, a high powered, and he'd use the term, I don't know if I can.
Okay.
He goes, you go into it an asshole and you come out of it an asshole. Yes. An asshole.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have to take care of yourself, you know? So like, that's the way I look at ultra running. You know, you have to be humble. You have to let go and not try to treat it like your job, where you can go in and like stir some things up and, you know, get people to get on the ball or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not going to work. Like, yeah. Like the old phrase, you know, the mountains don't care about your problems. You know, they don't care who you are. They've been there for millions, billions of years, and they're going to be there millions of years after you're gone. So you got to accept your place and just, you know, do it in such a way that you're not bringing your ego into a situation that your ego really isn't going to work or do anything for you.
Yeah.
And I find that a lot of runners, they attack it like they do their job, or they attack like some project, and they just don't, it doesn't pay off that way, because it's not something they can talk themselves out of, or, you know, whatever, you know, it's like, you got to deal with it.
When you've eaten something you shouldn't have, and you're throwing up on the edge of the trail, there's nothing else you can do if you made that mistake.
The Sherpa is not going to help you.
Yeah, that's true. Well, Rob, thanks so much for the time. I appreciate you being part of this, and I've enjoyed our conversation, and wish you well in your endeavors with your applied sports psychology and the things that you're learning. And
thanks for having me on, Eric. Yeah, I really enjoyed talking.
Hope to run into you on the trail sometime. I would enjoy getting to meet you.
I'm sure we will.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Trail Talk. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and review. And don't forget to subscribe. That way you won't miss out on any new episodes. If you'd like to contact me, you can find me on Facebook as @UltramarathonMindset. Or you can find me on the web at theultramarathonmindset.com. Remember, your mindset is the key to success in running and in life, and developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Hey, thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time.